Today's reading is a reading that's very important to me. I think about it often. I've asked Laura, if she's here, to share the reading. It's from Hafiz.
This reading comes from Hafiz, translated by Daniel Ladinsky. Hafiz was a Persian poet from the 14th century. Once, a young woman said to me, "Hafiz, what is the sign of someone who knows God?" I became very quiet and looked deep into her eyes, then replied, "My dear, they have dropped the knife. Someone who knows God has dropped the cruel knife that most of us so often use upon their tender self and others."
Thank you, Laura. So when we meet somebody who is spiritually mature, we naturally feel safe, welcomed, and understood. Hafiz is spot on about this. I think the key is that they no longer judge, and they hold a presence in which judging is completely irrelevant. But more than that, their spiritual presence rubs off on others, and we walk away taller. So I have to owe a debt to the many spiritual teachers that I have met, whether they were younger than me, older. There are many people who taught me about love and taught me about God as love. And without having met people of strong faith, I wouldn't have been able to make any sense of organized religion at all. Probably you can relate. Religion on its own makes absolutely no sense to me. It's only when I meet somebody who embodies it that it comes to life. And before I begin, I want to say that I believe there are many pathways to God, and that each of us needs to find our own path. So here's a little bit of my path. Are you ready? We've only got like 10, 15 minutes. So fasten your seatbelts. So 45 years ago, I was born in Scotland in a small town called Arbroath. I didn't grow up religious because my parents quit their faith when I was probably about 6. They taught me about social justice, and they taught me to be a person in service to others and to be compassionate, kind of like the fruits of Christianity without any of the teachings itself. And they left me alone to make up my own mind about whether there was a God or not. And for most of my life, up until my late 20s, I was strongly agnostic. So it's kind of weird that I became one of the most religious people I know. I just happened to be religious in many traditions and not just one. And there's something that you need to know about me, which is that I grew up as a girl. I am a transgender person. And for the first half of my life, my name was Ruth, and people understood and saw me as a girl, because that's the way I was born. And this, I think, really informs a lot of my ministry. I don't think about it consciously all the time, but deep down, there's two things that are central and a good fit for Suquamish UCC. One is I have a strong passion for the underdog and for social justice. I know how debilitating and difficult it is to live in the face of oppression and people trying to change you. And the other is that because society didn't make sense and people and I couldn't find my place, I escaped into nature a lot and I developed a really deep relationship with Mother Earth very early on. This was a vague thing. I didn't have any concepts with it, but my relationship with God in creation was there right from the start. So if I didn't take communion until I was 29, how on earth did I end up as an interspiritual, interfaith minister? Well, there's four events I'm going to share with you. It's really a slow dawning. I think that many of us these days, perhaps you're different, but many of us don't have a pivotal aha moment. We have a slow moving towards sacred understanding. So the first really big event that opened me on my sacred journey was I fell in love and married a woman who was a very open-minded Christian. Now, I had been quite seriously Bible-bashed in the past. for being queer. But this was a person whose faith made her more positive in the face of social justice. It gave her a resilience and a strength that I didn't have as an agnostic person. And I was fascinated by this. I wanted to see what it was that was strengthening her. The second event, and you'll enjoy this one if you're woo-woo. I don't know if we've got any woo-woo people in the congregation. I love that word, woo-woo. This was a really obscure thing that happened. It was around the time of my Saturn return, and I went to get a healing from this lady. She did a laying on of hands healing. And most of the time in the session, she stood at my head and put her hands there for about half an hour. And it was the most loving touch. I was quite astonished by it. And it reminded me of when I was a small child, before my parents quit their faith, they used to take me up to the Episcopalian Cathedral in the big city nearby Dundee. And you'd go up to the front and the adults would get the bread and wine, and the priest, it was obviously he, laid his hands on your head. And it was that same feeling of absolute love and acceptance. And I was struck by this. So at the end of the session, I said, wow, you have the most healing hands. The only time I've ever felt that before was as a child, told her the whole story. And she said, well, it's not my healing, it's Jesus's healing. He was standing at your feet the whole time. And I knew in my heart that it was true and that it was his touch that I was recognizing. And you know, my reaction was, oh no, oh no, I don't like Christians. And I don't want to follow Jesus, I just want to agree with him. Following him is so difficult, but I think I was the most reluctant conversion ever. I was very foul-mouthed, well, not foul-mouthed, but ugly feeling about it. But that's when I decided, okay, if Jesus is standing at my feet, it is clearly my path to not just agree with him, but to follow him. So the third thing that really was quite formational in my journey towards being a person of strong faith was moving to Australia. When I was 27, I moved to Australia for 3.5 years. What an amazing land. It was the first time I'd lived abroad. And my understanding of Mother Nature and my relationship with the living earth woke up while I was there. So remember, I said as a child, I would go to the beach and the trees and the hills. Well, now something deeper opened in me. And I think the main reason for that was to see a land with fresh eyes and to really see the awe and beauty and wonder. And another little, you know, little things that happened. For 2 months, I shared my office with this wonderful, wonderful group of Aboriginal women. I worked in the field of domestic violence. I worked with men who were committing violence to their families. And I only was part-time. So when they shut down to refurbish the Aboriginal family violence shelter, the women shared their office with me. And I got to hang around them and be around them. And there was something about the way that they talked about Mother Nature that was astonishing to me. I remember Daphne saying, Simon, I was just talking to Mother about you the other day and telling her about your car and your travels and like really minute details. And I was like, Daphne, your mother's dead, isn't she? You're talking about Mother Nature. And Daphne said, yes, yes. And anyway, Mother Nature, she said this and told me all this information that it was like she was talking to her grandmother or, you know, Mother was a real being to her. And I got to know these women quite well. And before they left, I invited them over for a meal. And they came over. And I remember them coming out the car and talking to the spirits of the land, the ancestors of the land, announcing themselves, saying why they were there, and asking forgiveness for trespassing. This astonished me that Aboriginal people would ask for permission to walk upon this land. I learned something really important then. And Chief Seattle, or Chief Siach, as I've heard some of the Suquamish tribe say, says it so well. You've probably heard this before. This is from the speech attributed to him. Every part of the soil is sacred in the estimation of my people. Every hillside, every valley, every plain and grove has been hollowed out by some sad or happy event in days long vanished. Even the rocks, which seem to be dumb and dead as they swelter in the sun along the silent shore, thrill with the memories of stirring events connected with the lives of my people. And the very dust upon which you now stand responds more lovingly to their footsteps than yours, because it is rich with the blood of our ancestors, and our bare feet are conscious of its sympathetic touch. There's a living history and a very real reciprocal relationship with the land that is alive for those who can perceive it. And I realized I didn't know how to perceive it. So when, shortly after that, I returned to Scotland, I saw my ancestral homeland very differently. And next week, I'll talk to you more about that. We're going to talk about Celtic Christianity next week. So the last one, and I'm conscious of time because I could be here for 3 days on this one, is I went to live in the Abbey on Iona. Many of you know this. I've talked about this with you before when I've come as a guest preacher. So Iona is one of the world's pilgrimage sites. It's a deeply beautiful and holy place. It's a tiny island. It's 1 mile by 3 miles. It's got like 100 people who live there when there's no tourists. And 250,000 people go there every year. Many of them come because it's the place where Christianity first arrived in Scotland with St. Columba in the year 563. But there's something very beautiful about this land. The monks left hundreds of years ago during the Reformation in Scotland. And then 80 years ago, a new community moved into the ruins of the abbey and started to rebuild them. And they're called the Iona community, and they're still there. They're a very creative, ecumenical, justice and peace-leaning, wonderful group of people. And I went to live with them and be a member of their community for 3 years. 2.5, really. But I'll get to that later. So being there with these incredible people gave me a glimpse of what Christianity should have become. And ever since, I've been searching for that elusive and beautiful vision that I caught there. So as I said, I lived there for 2.5 years, offering hospitality and care to the guests who came, thousands and thousands of people. And many of those people shared deep soul truths and aspects of their faith with me. I learned to lead worship. I learned to play music in the church because our musician needed a day off. And I wanted to give her a day off, which meant I had to learn Pescador de Hombres and many other hymns. Even though I didn't read music, it was terrifying because Iona has this amazing reputation for music. So I'm no longer a part of the Iona community, but I remain very grateful to this vibrant, open-minded, creative bunch of people. And one of the things that happened there was I recorded my first album. And I want to share with you one of my songs. This is the Prayer of St. Francis that I wrote. So remember, I didn't know very much about Christianity. So I went to the shop and I saw a postcard. On the postcard was the Prayer of St. Francis. And I thought it was brilliant. Loved it. But it was very religious language. And I wanted to rewrite it into non-religious language. So I wrote it into the way that I would say it. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. Grant that I can see through my human pain and still feel loved. in the darkness. Let light be found in there. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. We all need to learn to forgive a few more hundred times. Melt our hatred and let love take root in our hearts. Lord, make me a channel of your peace. And through my own pain and need, I will learn to understand. Reach through our sorrow, let it be joy. Oh, let it be joy. Lord, make me a channel of peace in my life. I have an interesting relationship with that song of mine. It's really the song of St. Francis. Because it's very, I've learned over time that when you place a shared prayer that millions of people pray with and love into your own heart, and if you voice it with your own melody and your sung voice, you add tremendous prayer and energy to it. And it was shortly after I wrote that, that my life began to change in ways that I didn't really like very much. What do they say? Be careful what you pray about, because God is always listening and answers. She answers your prayers in ways that are not necessarily what you want or expect. I see many of you smiling. You can relate. And very suddenly, in 2008, everything fell apart. My wife had fallen out of love with me and into love with someone else. And the two of them were the ministers in charge. So I needed to leave. I needed to get away from the community for my sake as well as theirs. And what seemed far too quickly, I lost my home, marriage, job, community, esteem, reputation. And shortly afterwards, my physical and mental health began to plummet too. Too much change, too quickly. But before we get there, just on the eve of that happening, or perhaps when it was happening, that's when I heard my calling to be a minister. I remember I was walking out from the retreat center on Iona, and if I put it into words, it was like this. I heard God ask me to be a minister in a new way that didn't exist yet. And I remember thinking, panicking, I don't know how to do that. And in my imagination, I heard laughing. And that was the key that made me realize, oh, why would I be asked to do something I can't do? And I remember thinking, what is it, God, you want me to do? And I heard, love my people. And I thought, oh, I can do that. So that happened, then everything fell apart. And I want you to understand that my breakdown after leaving Iona was also my breakthrough. I remember the first time I snuck back onto the island when my ex and our new fellow were away for training and the whole team was away. I snuck on the island and I stood in front of the Abbey and I looked at it feeling terribly sorry for myself. And the words of scripture rose up and they said, "He who loses his life gains it." And I think that this is a truth that many of you might have been through yourself, that dark night of the soul that is absolutely unbearable and awful. But we emerge from it with a much stronger soul. And I emerge with a much bigger capacity to love and a less reliance on my intellect and ability to do things. We are human beings and not human doings after all. So 12 years ago, on Labor Day weekend, a week after I left the Abbey, I flew to Seattle. It was the start of a three-month pilgrimage that I made across North America. Everybody came to Iona on pilgrimage, so I decided to go away on pilgrimage. And I went on an amazing journey with the intention of meeting God in every encounter. And I nurtured my soul by doing two things I'd always wanted to do: learn carpentry and be a musician. And that's how I ended up washing up on your shores, coming to Port Townsend to learn carpentry and work as a musical minister. And so it was ago that 12 years ago on Labor Day, the eve of my 33rd birthday, a very pivotal year for me because it was the year that Jesus died, but I kept on living. And I remember on that Labor Day, I took the Victoria Clipper up to Victoria, that little boat. And because I was Scottish, I didn't know about the geography of Washington. And there was all this land, which I realized now was Kitsap and Marrowstone, where I was going to live. I remember it was raining and looking out at it going, what is this place? And somewhere deep in my soul, I knew that I would live there and that I would have a brand new life. I want to end with one of my favorite lines from a song. I'm as likely to quote songs as I am scripture. You probably have to get used to that. This is a song by Dar Williams called After All. And she says at the end of her song, when you live in a world, well, it gets into who you thought you'd be. And now I smile at how the world changed me. I think that life chose me after all. When you live in a world, well, it gets into who you thought you'd be. And now I smile at how the world changed me. I think life chose me after all. And I thank God for being present through it all. One of my favorite Christian teachers, James Finley, says this: God protects us from nothing, but unexplainably sustains us in all things. I needed a lot of sustaining, and that process brought me so close to God. So it was both in going to Iona and leaving that I really deepened my faith. I thank you for listening to my story. I hope you'll have heard some things that you relate to. I don't want my story just to be my story. And I invite you over the next week, if you'd like, to reflect upon your own spiritual formation. Maybe sit down with your favorite beverage. Grab a pen and a notepad and jot down the events, both good and bad, that taught you about love. Make note of the people who inspired your faith. Amen.